Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The Market Basket employee uprising has been going on for about a month now, and the embattled co-CEOs issued another ultimatum today for workers to return to the job. By walking off the job and refusing to come back until former CEO Arthur T. Demoulas is reinstated, employees loyal to Arthur T. have become populist heroes to many people, but they've also crippled Market Basket's 71 stores. WBUR's labor and technology reporter Kurt Nickisch joins us for the latest in this labor dispute and family feud. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, yes, Sasha.
And Kurt, tell us where things stand right now.
Well, the latest is that the company is sending out letters today to the roughly 600 to 800 administrative and distribution workers who've walked off the job and crippled the company. And they're telling them they need to go back to work by Friday. They have sent letters out like this before, but this one says it's the final letter. And it says that if they don't return, the company is going to consider those jobs abandoned, thereby ending employment. And so reaction so far from workers has been mixed. Some think it's just another deadline, but others do feel like this may be their last chance to return without consequences. Meanwhile, we've had these dueling statements from both the Market Basket board, the independent directors, and from the fired CEO, Arthur T. Demoulas. He says that he wants to pursue his bid to buy the company, but he's only been getting counterproposals that he calls unworkable. But the board says that he's basically holding the company hostage to an ongoing negotiation. Of course, neither he nor the board is giving any details on these negotiations, so we really can't judge where they're at.
Kurt, while all this negotiating is going on, real people are feeling real effects. You know, some of these store shelves are nearly empty, especially of fresh foods like meat and produce. There may be canned goods still there. And that means customers who usually shop there have to go elsewhere. How is this affecting people's paychecks, how much they spend on groceries?
Yeah, not so good. I mean, it really depends on the shopper, but it's clear that it's hurting customers who live close to Market Baskets, especially those who don't have cars and walk or take public transportation there. And particularly low-income shoppers, Market Basket is definitely very popular because of their low prices. They sort of own that value corner of the market. I spoke with Isabel Jackson. She's a woman who's raising her 5 grandchildren in public housing in Cambridge, and she says that she's spending so much more money on food now.
Having to go to Star Market, oh, it's killing me. You get like 8 bags, and it's like, mine was just like $100 and something. I'm very upset. You know, you don't shut down a business like this and leave the people to not eat.
So Jackson calls Market Basket workers selfish, says it's not a way to run a business.
So shoppers, customers obviously hurt, but so are workers. You know, there are part-time workers who've had their hours cut because there isn't enough work to justify asking them to come into the stores. What have you heard, Kurt, from those part-timers and from the managers who make their schedules?
Well, it's interesting. Part-time workers and managers both did not think it would ever come to this point. Most store directors signed a petition saying that they would work only for Arthur T. Demoulas, but now the very same protests that they've been supporting have forced them to tell their part-time workers to stay home because they don't have any work for them. I spoke with Michael Dunleavy. He's the director of the Somerville store. He clearly feels terrible about having to cut the hours of his part-timers, but he promised that he'd get them their shifts back as soon as business was back to normal.
And they take a little time, a week or two. Then the warehouses will be squared away. Product will start coming back. The customers will come back. If Arthur T's back in his customary position, I have no fear that that won't correct itself quite quickly.
Kurt, you said some people like him feel terrible. Do you sense that some people feel regret about what they've done, this uprising they've so successfully created?
You're starting to see more awareness about that from some of the workers. They're starting to question because it just wasn't expected to go on this long. Mm. Clearly, the party line is, you know, we're going to keep doing what we're doing until Arthur T. Demoulas is back. But, you know, what you are getting is a lot of other people starting to weigh in and say, hey, it's hurting workers, it's hurting customers, it's time to end this. Parents, for instance, of high schoolers who are earning their summer pay at these jobs at Market Basket are now starting to call and complain and say this has got to end because they have to pay for college in the
sure.
fall.
That's Kurt Nickisch, WBUR's business and technology reporter. Kurt, thank you.
You got it.
time now for the Remembrance Project, The Lives of Those Among Us. This is our series of stories from writer Alyssa Eli about ordinary people who lived extraordinary lives.
Father Paul Lucy died May 3rd at the Campion Center, a Jesuit community in Weston, Massachusetts. He was 98 years old. Father Lucy came from a widely religious family. Two brothers were also priests. When his younger sister died in his later years, he conducted her funeral mass from his wheelchair. He was a deep listener, especially when giving sessions and spiritual directions to others, yet not one to talk of his own life. Monastic training was Spartan, including 3 years in musical Lenox, Massachusetts, where he was allowed to attend only one Tanglewood concert each summer. Like many Jesuit priests, Father Lucy was an academic, and he began in philosophy. With the sudden national hunger for scientists during World War II, he was told he needed to switch fields and teach math and physics. This required agility and an abrupt redirection of his Jesuit mind. He did not know math and physics. Eventually, perhaps with relief, he returned to philosophy. But redirection became a kind of life theme, sometimes controversially. When he was rector of the Weston College, a theological seminary in woodsy remoteness, he rejected tradition and insisted on moving the students into Cambridge. It was the opposite of fleeing to the suburbs. He wanted his men to lead less isolated, more integrative, more realistic lives. This included dwelling among women. He was beloved and renowned for the formal spiritual direction he gave. Traditionally, this had been a forum for reviewing sins and personal problems. Father Lucy saw the interaction differently, another redirection. It became a chance to pay attention together, to a thought, a voice, a moment of God's presence that might have gone otherwise unrecognized. It shifted the focus utterly. He did have less lofty interests. He enjoyed touring the Big Dig and reading about Whitey Bulger, remarking to a friend that he thought there had to be something salvageable in the gangster's bones. In his last months, though he had not been one to talk of his life, Father Lucy spoke often of the fact that he welcomed his death. The very private man was forthcoming about his future.
Alyssa Eli, remembering Father Paul Lucy, who died last May in Weston at the age of 98.
The Remembrance Project airs every Tuesday on Radio Boston. If you'd like to nominate someone to be profiled for the series, you can send an email to obits@wbur.org, and there's also more information at radioboston.org.
And speaking of goodbyes, we want to remember actor and comedian Robin Williams, who died yesterday at the age of 63, apparently taking his own life.
His wife, Susan Schneider, said she hopes the focus will not be on her husband's death, but in her words, on the countless moments of joy and laughter he gave millions of people.
And so we'll end today with one of those moments from a 2008 comedy performance in London.
But the whole thing is, American politics are always crazy. I live in California. We're a 60% Hispanic state. We have an Austrian governor. Even old Nazis are going, that's weird. And Arnold could be president if it wasn't for that tiny clause. If you're not born in America, you can't run for president. And Arnold, the little immigrant boy who had a dream and a vial of anabolic steroids. And he lives with and married to Maria Shriver, who's a Kennedy, who's getting smaller and smaller. I believe he's living off of her. I believe he's sucking the Kennedy out of her slowly but surely. And that's why he's become a moderate Republican, which is kind of cool. It's like a Volvo with a gun rack. You don't see a lot of it. But who can we get that would run and make the whole world go, wow? And that guy would be Jack Nicholson. He has got cooler movies than Arnold. You can't handle the truth. We'll never have a sex scandal with Jack. He's done everybody. I had Angelina Jolie, and afterwards she adopted me. And you'll never have a drug scandal. Jack has done every drug known to mankind. He's the only guy in the world that Keith Richards would go, I have to go home now, Jack. I'll leave you right now because some people say that I look like Bono and I have to say, stop drinking. But recently Bono was on stage in Scotland and it was very quiet like right now. And he started clapping his hands and he clapped his hands and he said, every time I clap my hands, a child in Africa dies. And from the back of the Scottish audience, someone went, "Then stop clapping your hands!" Good night, thank you, sir!
That's actor and comedian Robin Williams performing in London in 2008. He died yesterday at his home in Marin County at the age of 63.
Glassy skies of blue and icy, clouds of white and the brightness of day. I like the dark and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And what an amazing talent. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Faces of people passing by, I see friends shaking and singing, how do you do? They really say, I love you. I hear